Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome not just someone who has done exceedingly well in the world of academics, but a former colleague, a good friend from my days in ITC, Dr. Rajiv Sabharwal from the US. Rajiv, welcome to the show.
Pleasure, Ashutosh. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Rajiv is the Distinguished Professor Edwin and Carly Bradbury Chair and the Department Chair of Information Systems at the Sam M. Walton College of Business Administration. And as I mentioned to you, he has been a former colleague with me in ITC and he's had an amazing journey. So Rajiv, before we talk about your area of specialization, which is information technology, tell me about your motivation to move from the corporate world in India to academics overseas, especially the US.
So this was back in 1984. So I had joined ITC in 1983, and you and I, Ashutosh, yep, had started interacting around that time. What started happening was a combination of really two things. Mm-hmm. So one, I noticed that I had some questions, and mm-hmm, and I was enjoying the corporate world. I really liked ITC as a company, mm-hmm, but I had some questions such as, why are some companies and some individuals able to derive greater ROI, mm, from information technology than others? Mm-hmm. And I started seeing that ITC was doing a fantastic job. I had also worked with Duncan's or National Tobacco Company, mm-hmm, as an intern previously, and I'd seen some of their challenges and struggles. And so that had become a very interesting set of questions to me. Mm-hmm. I also saw a little bit through some personal experience about how different roles that individuals were playing with respect to IT, mm, was affecting how much attention they were getting. I had had some good luck in that I had missed some training. And so instead of being on the very technical side, I've gotten, mm, to more of the behavioral managerial side of IT. And so that whole dynamic also, mm, posed some interesting questions. Mm. And I felt in order to really address those kind of questions, doing a PhD would, mm, be an interesting avenue. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was happening coincidentally around the same time is some of my best friends at ITC in information systems area, mm, started leaving the company. Mm. And they started leaving the company and going to Australia, New Zealand, US. Correct. And most of them were doing that in what was then called body shopping. It's still, mm, a prevalent term, the nature's changed. Mm. But basically what they were doing was they were going to these other countries and they were getting paid 60%, 70% at most. Correct. Of what a local hire would get paid, mm, right? Mm. And I had, so I was losing some of my social network, mm-hmm, but I was also seeing some potential value of moving abroad. Mm-hmm. But I did not want to go that route. I did not want to be working at any location where I was getting paid less than some of my peers.
Correct.
So those two combinations drove me towards the PhD. And you, once I'd made that decision, US seemed at that point obvious, mm, because from a doctoral education perspective, mm, it seemed most advanced. Mm.
Fascinating. And I must compliment you. I mean, you know, in 84, you took a call on the future of information technology and moved to the right market in the US. You know, that at that time, body shopping and India was nowhere on the scene at that time. But congratulations on this amazing move that you made.
But Rajiv, one other little thing, sorry to interrupt, uh-huh, you, Ashutosh, but one other little thing that was fascinating me was this little company that was getting started called Apple Computer. And there's this Times magazine issue that featured Steve Jobs. I think he was on the cover, and that whole little phenomenon was fascinating, absolutely, me as well.
So I don't know if you recall, or you may recall, that the first Apple computer in India came to ITC, and it was in my office.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh,
in the information systems division, You know, that one big integrated thing which was there. Yes. So
yes, the map.
I forget what.
And which year would that have been?
84 probably. Because 83, 84 probably.
Yes.
Around that time. But let's carry on with our conversation. Yes. You know, so when you look at information technology, Rajiv, what are the challenges that you think individuals face in the digital age, and what is the recourse?
Fascinating. We all love it.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot get away from it. Mm-hmm. It's very addictive. And there are a lot of people who have done work on technology addiction as an area. But one of the things we've all noticed mm-hmm. is there will be social events, and not just kids, but grown adults would be at a social event, and people would be on their smartphones and checking things, and it has almost become a smartphone has become an extended part of our body.
Correct.
So it seems right, and just people just cannot get away from it, and the challenge that creates is exactly that we cannot get away from it, right? I know of a lot of people, and I have occasionally done it. I try very hard not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm expecting some communication from a collaborator overseas, I check my email in the middle of the night. So if I get up midway through my sleep to go to the restroom, I would check my email because I'd be curious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people doing that.
Mm.
The other related thing is, because the smartphone is not just a phone, it's an IT device, it's a reading device, it's a gaming device, it's a fitness device.
Mm.
We are just so consumed by it. It's no longer that we are consumers of IT. In fact, IT is our consumer.
Right.
It just consumes us.
Mm.
So that to me is a huge challenge. And it creates issues. We see a lot of driving accidents that mm-hmm. occur because of people texting while driving. And of course, it's illegal in certain parts of the world, in India, for example. But mm-hmm. So I think that's it doesn't give people the opportunity to get away and relax.
Mm-hmm.
From a recourse perspective, I think once you identify the problem, as with most things, once you identify the problem,
mm-hmm.
The solution becomes obvious, right? Mm. So once you recognize that you're addicted to something, you need to start becoming less dependent on it. As I'm a professor, I'm almost working 7 days a week all year round.
Mm-hmm.
But I make the deliberate attempt to take certain time off, when I turn my email off, when I just set out of office reminders. So during the Christmas break recently, I did not check email for 10 days. And the only use that I made of my smartphone mm-hmm. was for phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
The only use that I made of my iPad was to mm-hmm. read books, because I mm-hmm. prefer reading books on iPad rather mm-hmm. than on the a printed copy.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I did not play any games. I did not do any texting. No emails, none of that.
Amazing.
And I felt rejuvenated after doing that for 10 days. I came out much better.
Fascinating. And I wish people would have that discipline that you have built into your life. But you know, moving on, I'd love to get your perspective. How, you know, a digital world cuts across boundaries. How will this work in a world where borders are coming up all over again?
Well, as we see, a border may be breaking down with USSR, with Russia
getting into Ukraine right now. I know.
Right. Overall, I think countries are striking back. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's the Empire Strikes Back kind of thing. So we saw China's great firewall. We've seen from the 2000s. Russia and Iran temporarily disconnected their networks entirely from the internet in 2019. The US passed a law called the Clarifying Lawful Overseas Use of Data, which mandates every US firm, including all of their affiliates, to disclose data that they host on their servers, even if it's located overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So there is quite a bit of that that's happening. I think that will only increase. It will increase, but what we are also beginning to see a lot is more digital surveillance by companies. We have been seeing that for a long time, Facebook's and Amazon's and so on. But we are also seeing digital surveillance by countries now. I've been part of some conversations. So on WhatsApp, for example, where I had people say, don't say this because this is too strongly against in country X or Y or Z, right, and you could get into trouble, right? And we're also seeing things like cyber terrorism that cuts across global borders. We are seeing there are indications of cyber warfare that have been talked about, and at least by some politicians. It's become a very different world, and I think all the opportunities that we get from these global connections, they also come with a lot of challenges.
I agree with you. And yet, Rajiv, when you look at technology, I mean, there is artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, now the entire advent of the metaverse, and how we're going to be living in a different world altogether. I'd love to get your perspective on how are all these technologies going to impact the average human being?
So the thing about AI at its very basic level, whether we're looking at AI and machine or machine learning, these technologies learn from experience, right? They learn from experience in a certain context, in a certain place, and that's what they operate based on. Where it transfers very well is as long as you're in a similar context, it transfers well. But when you move into a situation which is very much separated, very different from the conditions under which the AI ML has been trained, they begin to struggle. The problem that creates is human beings don't often recognize that. I'll give you an example from a very recent experience. So I was on a long distance drive last week in icy conditions. I'm fortunate to have a nice car, and I have a feature called dynamic stability control, which is supposed to help, have your vehicle help you when you need when you needed to get into assisting you, right? I had that turned on, and that was simply so the car would help me, right? And then a truck in front of me, as on the highway, a truck in front of me braked. I braked. It happened to be that right there, it was a pretty icy road conditions. And as I braked, the car tried to take control.
Okay.
And I pumped the brakes. I tried to gain control for about, it was not a long time. It seemed like an eternity. It would have been like 30 seconds. But for about 30 seconds, I was trying to go take the direction, the car in one direction, the car was trying to take me in another direction. And Ashutosh, I was swerving between lanes, across lanes, right? Oh. And there's traffic coming behind me. And honestly, I've never been more scared while driving. It was very scary, right? I quickly turned dynamic stability control on. Fortunately, I was able to take control of the car. Fortunately, people behind me were driving at slower speeds and avoided hitting me. I called my wife and asked her to check on the internet about this. And she found out that they don't recommend you use it in icy conditions. You don't use dynamic stability control under those conditions.
Well, thank God you're absolutely safe. That's more.
Thank you. So that's the assumption. And I'm doing research on AI. Right? I have a PhD student currently doing his dissertation on the impacts of AI. And I talk about it in my classes. But even as someone who's semi-knowledgeable about AI, I was caught unawares of this. Right? Imagine what happens to a common person who doesn't recognize some of these issues.
Right. And if you were to add one more variable, imagine what was to have a common person in a country where the traffic is completely indisciplined.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Happen, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yes. So I'm fascinated by the concept of self-driving cars. I do use a robotic vacuum cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
at home we have that and we like it. Even it struggles when it's trying to get over a carpet and mm-hmm. you know about those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that's a big challenge that we need to overcome as society.
Very, very interesting. And the other question, Rajiv, that is being asked by virtually everybody is that in the digital world, what happens to individual privacy?
There is no such thing.
Okay.
There's no such thing if you are using the internet, if you are using technologies. And the connections these devices are able, these technologies are able to make are so fascinating.
Mm.
So I'm sure you've noticed it. I'm sure your viewers have noticed it. If you go to Amazon and look for a product, after that, within a day, probably sooner, you would find that the ads that you are watching on your streaming Absolutely. Services,
mm.
on your television devices, if you're using an Apple TV or any such, those ads would be catered to what you would have searched for on Amazon. And so there's so much connection.
Mm.
Years ago, Ashutosh, 20 years ago, sort of a video cassette that mm-hmm. I used to use at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In one of my classes, I used to play this about privacy at that particular point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the experts in those videos recommended, if you want to maintain your privacy, do not use a credit card.
Okay.
But pay cash. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you should be prepared to mm-hmm. for someone to get your credit card information, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. If we really want to have everything that we're doing private,
mm-hmm.
we need to keep it private. Don't be on social media. Don't mm-hmm. post. If you are on social media, don't post your pictures. Don't say anything against an individual or a company yeah. or a country, right? Otherwise, who knows who's going to get access to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Very well said.
Very challenging.
And we are living in a very, very inclusive world, if I can use that term.
Yes.
But now, Rajiv, moving on to the impact the pandemic has had across the entire world, what are the opportunities the pandemic has thrown to enhance the digital economy?
So obviously it's a terrible, terrible situation.
Correct.
We've lost so many lives as worldwide. We've had so much sickness. Economies have, all global worldwide economies have been affected. So there's been a lot of negative effect.
Hmm.
But there are also some positives that have come out of it. So we've all learned new ways to work.
Hmm.
We have learned new ways to live. And I know of a lot of situations where kids have moved back to be with their parents and are working from parents' homes because you can work from anywhere. People are moving to locations. Even individuals are moving to locations where they would be happiest at living rather than their places, their cities of work. And we have learned that both in the context of work and pleasure. We've had situations where families and friends celebrate events together on using these digital media technologies, which they didn't do before the pandemic, birthdays and anniversaries and so on, right?
Mm.
So it's, and I think a lot of that will continue. A lot of that will continue post-pandemic.
Mm.
Hopefully post-pandemic is sooner than later.
Correct.
But wherever that is, there will be that. I think there is a much greater recognition by all human beings
mm-hmm.
of this need for a work-life balance.
Right.
I think it's reminded of us of that. And we see of people retiring early so that they can do what they really relish. And I think that will also continue, at least for the 5-7 years post-pandemic.
Well said, well said. So my next question to you is, you know, again, you are sitting in a developed economy. You are sitting in the age of information technology as a senior professor or distinguished professor. When you scan the environment, what would Rajiv's predictions be? Or what would be your top 2 or 3 predictions for the digital world?
So I'm gonna project maybe 15 years, 10 to 15 years down.
Right? Sure.
So one of the things I anticipate happening in, especially in more technologically advanced countries, is somewhat of a decline of these mega cities, overpopulated and congested cities, and a move towards more people living in smaller cities. Because of this, to some extent, because of the recognition people have off of pandemic, because of how people are beginning to work differently. So that would be one, I think, and I think that's a good thing. We have a lot of large cities, overly congested. I couldn't live in any of those.
Absolutely.
I used to live in Miami, and just the traffic there was getting crazy. And I visit Dallas often, and it's very difficult for me to drive in Dallas compared to Fayetteville, Arkansas. Mm. Right? The other effect, and that's also been happening for some time, and it really saddens me, Ashutosh, is while I'm predicting cities to become smaller, I expect companies to become bigger.
Okay.
And the reason it saddens me is we are going to see an even further decline of small mom and pop stores where you would walk up and make friends, and it's the giants like the Amazons and the Walmarts, and of course, you know, the more IT-oriented companies, of course, Amazon is as well, but the Apples and the Microsofts and the Facebooks of the world, right? But we've seen a decline, at least in the US, there's been a tremendous decline in bookstores, physical bookstores, right? So one of my favorite company, Borders, one of my favorite companies, Borders, closed down a few years ago. We know that companies like Best Buy, even a technology vendor, has been struggling. So that trend, I think, is going to only accelerate, and that's a sad one. The third that I expect is we are going to have in the next 10 to 15 years, we are going to have some major unfortunate incidents, which will shake us.
Wow.
Whether it be cyber attacks, whether it be cyber terrorism, and that's going to cause us as a world, as a society, to have a reset. I've long believed in what I call punctuated equilibrium model. We go through this fade, these periods of stability, regular change, and then something shakes us, right? This pandemic has shook the world. We know that.
Absolutely.
That is a punctuation. I anticipate a technology-oriented, technology-triggered punctuation in the next 10 to 15 years. I don't know what it will be. My best expectation is it's going to be a major cyber terrorism attack, but it's going to change how we look at technology.
Amazing. And what great thoughts from a person who actually recognized the potential of Apple, as you just said, in the early 80s. Thank you. So I've got my last question now coming up. And Rajiv, this is about all the students you have worked with over the last few decades. I'd love to get your perspective on how the younger students in the last 8-10 years, whether it's the millennials or the Gen Zs or the Gen Ys, how are they adapting to the digital world as compared to, I can't say my generation, but people who were maybe 15, 18 years younger than me?
Yeah, it's like they're born with it, right? I mean, the Gen Z is born with it. So one of my nephews, he's like, he's 9. And even when he was 3, he would, or actually even younger, I think 2.5, he would surf the internet on his dad's tablet, right? And he would sometimes be able to help his father, my brother, with things at a very, very young age, because it just comes naturally to them, right? I know that if I try to play these video games on video controls, I'm absolutely terrible. And I've been driving for a very, very long time, but I cannot navigate those. And And these little kids are just so natural at it. It's you know, they've grown up with it. But what it also does is they seem to be a little bit less scared, less intimidated of technology. And I think we, the older lot, are somewhat more careful with respect to what we are doing on social media, etc. What we would post there, what we would say there, and they have no such inhibitions. So while I admire what they're doing, and I wish I was their age, of course we all do, but sometimes I get worried about what's going on.
Fascinating. Rajiv, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me first about your amazing journey from India, the corporate world, into academics to the US. Thank you for talking to me about your incredible perspectives on information technology. And, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better person who actually heads or chairs the Department of Information Systems at the Sam Walton College of Business. Thank you for giving me your predictions, your three predictions for the digital economy. You know, that was absolutely fascinating. And thank you for talking to me at such length about your perspectives on the young, on what is happening in the world of technology and in the world of artificial intelligence and machine learning. Thank you again and good luck.
Most welcome, Ashutosh. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.